Thank you. I thank the organizers and the Fields Institute for the kind invitation to this workshop. And in 1977, Khoroshev published his celebrated theorem about the exponential stability of the actions in quasi-integrable systems. And the hypotheses of the theorem are analyticity of the Hamiltonian and a weak non-degeneracy of the integrable approximation called steepness. My talk focuses on these non-degeneracy conditions, which is relevant also for applications, because, for example, in celestial mechanics, strong non-degeneracy conditions are rarely satisfied. Let me mention just a few examples for which steepness is relevant for applications. There are real asteroids in the main belt, such that if one performs one step of perturbation theory, the normal form in the spatial case is not convex, but is steep. And the same happens for Lagrangian points L4, L5 in the spatial case. And there it is even worse because for any value of the mass ratio before the critical one, the normal form in the spatial case is not convex nor quasi-convex. So one needs additional weaker non-degeneracy assumptions. So in particular, steepness holds in an interval of the Rasmeisho, which goes approximately from 0.01 up to 0.016. Other examples for which steepness is relevant are the so-called Riemann ellipsoids, which represent steady motions of ideal self-gravitating fluids. And also Jacques Lascar discussed the stability problem related to non-convex Hamiltonians in dynamical systems representing, for Hamiltonians representing the dynamics within particle accelerators. So let me start with a traditional synthetic statement of the Khoroshev theorem, which is well known, so I will not go through the details of it. But I would just like to remark that the stability times for the actions increase exponentially with the inverse power of the perturbation parameter epsilon. So as soon as epsilon becomes very small, these times increase exponentially, because it can become very long, but it is not a pure exponential. It is a stretched exponential, and the value of the stretching exponent beta therefore is very important for the asymptotic stability of the system. And even if the value of the stretching exponent has been later improved, already in the original proof on the Khoroshev theorem, the stretching exponent depended only on the number n of the degrees of freedom and on the specific steepness property of age of the integral approximation. And precisely depended only on the so-called steepness indices that are n minus 1 parameters, where n is the number of degrees of freedom. For analytic functions, these parameters take integer values, and for steep functions, these values are greater or equal than 1. A particular class of steep functions are represented by the quasi-convex and convex function, and for a quasi-convex and convex function, the steepness indices are all equal to 1. Then the dependence of beta, of the stretching exponent, to the steepness indices is monotone decreasing. That is, larger values for the steepness indices correspond to smaller exponents beta and shorter stability times. And since the quasi-convex function have the shorter steepness indices, they correspond to the longest possible stability times. So before going on, I would like to review the definition of the steepness indices. And so let us fix an intermediate dimension J, which ranges from 1 to n minus 1, which represents the dimension of the possible resonance lattices. And let us fix for convenience a point I in the action domain. And let us consider any plane lambda of dimension J, which is orthogonal to the gradient of the integrable Hamiltonian. That is the integral approximation for the frequency vector. Of course, any integer vector in this plane defines a zero divisor, because the scalar product of this vector with omega is equal to zero. This is. But to set up a perturbation theory, we would like to know how the small divisors change by changing the initial value of the action. And in particular, if we move from the action I to a small to a near action I prime, of course the frequency vector may be no more perpendicular to lambda, and it may have non-zero orthogonal projection over it. So ideally, the naive idea would be to require that the norm of this projection increase with the distance of I minus I prime with the power law. And this power law would represent the steepness index. But this idea is naive, because if we want really to enlarge significantly the class of the convex function, we need to ask something more. And in particular, Nekoroshev added to this kind of condition a max min condition, and precisely this is what is required for the variation of the small denominator. That is, let us consider any distance xi and any intermediate distance which eta, which goes from zero up to xi. Then on any intermediate distance eta, we consider the minimum of all this projection, and then for eta ranging from zero and to xi, we consider the maximum of this minima. And it is required that this maximum increase more than a constant times xi to the power dj. So dj is a steepness index. Of course, it is required uniformity with respect to any lambda, and we can put everything into a formal definition. This is the definition that Nekoroshev gave for steepness indices. And the function with the only positive steepness indices for any intermediate dimension j are called steep functions. So let us return to the exponential stability, and let us introduce the Nekoroshev conjecture. Of course, Nekoroshev theorem is a theorem, this is true. The exponential time in the statement represents an upper bound. But Nekoroshev himself gave some stronger importance to the stretched exponential. And I would like to remember what he wrote. He wrote that the author conjectures that, in fact, if we compare systems with the same number of frequencies, then those for which age has smaller steepness indices are in a certain sense more stable than the system with larger indices. In particular, systems with quasi-convex and perturbed Hamiltonian are the most stable. And it would be interesting to verify this dependence somehow, for example, on a computer. And this was the starting point for our study. This the study that I am going to present. It's a joint collaboration with Elena Lega and Claude Frechelet. So the first problem is to try to give a sense to the numerical investigation of this conjecture. Because naively, one could think to project the verification of this statement by taking two systems with different steepness indices, then one chooses many the initial condition in one system, many initial condition in the other, one numerical compute the evolution of the action for long times, so in some way one can numerically obtain estimates for the stability time, and compare the results. But the interpretation of the results would be not simple at all, because we know that the stability times do not depend only on the stretching exponents, but on other properties of the Hamiltonian. And for example, one of the most critical one is the local properties of the small denominators. Everybody knows that the stability properties in one point of the action space may be very different from the local stability properties in the other point. So we have to find systems which are characterized by which have different steepness indices but are characterized by the same resonances, the same small denominators and same perturbation. Is it possible? Yes, it is, because for non-quadratic Hamiltonians, the frequency map may be non-one-to-one, maybe not one-to-one. So we may choose different domains in the action space, which are characterized exactly by the same resonances and the same small denominators. So we have to choose a non-quadratic Hamiltonian with such a property, and which is characterized also by different steepness indices. this example, how to choose this Hamiltonian. The simplest way to construct steep non-convex functions is to write down cubic functions, because Nekrashev proved a sufficient conditions for steepness, which is a condition on the degeneracy of the free jet of the function. So the simplest way to construct a steep function is to start for a quadratic Hamiltonian which is not convex nor quasi-convex, and then to suitably add a cubic term. This function satisfies trivially, so immediate to see that satisfies the free jet non-degeneracy condition, so it is steep. And if we remove the cubic part, it is not steep, not convex. So it is a fact that this Hamiltonian has, in different domain of its action space, different values for the stiffness indices. And precisely, if the value of the action I2 is bigger than 1 over 2m, the Hamiltonian is quasi-convex, and both stiffness indices are equal to 1. If I2 is smaller than 1 over 2m, the Hamiltonian is steep but not quasi-convex, and the first stiffness index is equal to 2, and the second is equal to 1. At the changing line, both stiffness indices are equal to 2. So the stiffness indices change at the line I1 equal 1 over 2m. But if we look at the frequency map for this Hamiltonian, we see that it is not invertible, because let us look at the quadratic dependence of the second component of the frequency. And more, the second component of the frequency is symmetric as well with respect to the line I2 equal 1 over 2m. That is, if we consider points which are symmetric with respect to this value, are characterized exactly by the same frequency vector. So we have found an Hamiltonian for which this Hamiltonian has two domains which are characterized exactly by the same frequencies but different stiffness indices. So this is the ideal candidate to investigate Nekrashev conjecture. So the numerical computations that I'm going to show are done in a specific resonance, precisely the one-to-one resonance. In the action plane I1, I2, this resonance is represented, of course, by a parabola. Here there is the symmetry line for the frequency map, which is the frequency line, the symmetry line for the parabola. And we will integrate many different initial conditions very close to one point in the convex domain, and many close initial conditions which are symmetric with respect to the symmetry line. And since numerical experiments are best done with symplectic maps, I will use symplectic maps. So this is not a new idea. And to obtain results, to be able to investigate a large range in the perturbation parameter, I will use a perturbation which is in some sense close to the Arnold perturbations, which is because it is the sum of a resonant harmonic of order epsilon and a perturbation with full Fourier spectrum, which is depends on epsilon, but also on another parameter A, which is set to very small value, but fixed for all numerical integrations. So our numerical integrations are done by changing only the value of the perturbation parameter. So, okay. And before showing the result, it is more convenient, this is usual, to change action angle variables in such a way that one of the angles is exactly the resonant angle. And then we can write down the map with these new angles. And at first, this helps in the interpretation of the result. Let us consider the case in which we put the small parameter A equal to zero. In this case, the action J2 becomes constant of motion, and so the two equations are practically decoupled. The four equations of the map are decoupled, and the equations for psi prime and J prime are the resonant equation. The phase portrait for this variable is the usual one for resonances, and in particular, the resonance has an hyperbolic fixed point, and when we consider this equation in the four-dimensional system, this is an hyperbolic torus. Instead, on the other couple of variables, when A equal to zero, the dynamics is a simple rotation on the circle J2 equal constant. Now let us switch on A, which is an interesting case. We do not expect that the action J2 is constant, but if epsilon is small, the correction theorem is true, and so we expect that its long-term variation are bounded for exponentially long times. But just to give a look, let us give a look on how is the qualitative variation of these actions. And in this picture, I have reported the time variation of action J2 with respect to its initial condition for four sample orbits. And we see that the variation is not a ballistic one, but it looks like, at least qualitatively, a sort of random walk. It increases, it decreases, it increases, it decreases, and so on. So this suggests us to check for some statistical regularity for this kind of behavior. And the statistical regularity can be checked by computing the average of the quadratic dispersion of the action for many different orbits. And when we do this, we report the time evolution of this quadratic dispersion, we see that it increases approximately linearly with time, and so we can try to best fit this evolution with a linear law, and the slope of this linear law represents the diffusion coefficient for the action J2. So what we compute numerically is exactly the diffusion, the slope of this evolution, of the quadratic dispersion. And we repeat the computation for many different values of epsilon. Okay, there are many technical details to do such computations, because you can imagine when we decrease epsilon, if the Korosev theorem holds, these diffusion coefficients decrease exponentially, so they become very small. So in these 10 years, we needed to develop a lot of tools and recipes to detect this diffusion coefficient for small values of the parameters. Of course, I have not the time to review them here. I will just show you the results. So on the small box here, I have reported the action plane with the initial conditions, and this computation reports only initial conditions in the convex part of the action space. And in this plot, I have represented the logarithm of the 1 over the diffusion coefficients versus the logarithm of 1 over the perturbing parameter epsilon. And therefore, for each value of epsilon, a dot represents the diffusion coefficients for a set of orbits which are close to here. If the diffusion coefficient depended on epsilon as a power law, on this plot, it would be represented exactly by a straight line. You see that this is evidently not the case. And this is true for more than 40 orders of magnitude. So this decreasing of the diffusion coefficient is possibly fitted by an exponential law, and we tried to fit it. And in fact, we found that at least the first digit of the fit is reliable, is good. The others are not. So we provide as a stretching exponent for this computation the value 0.2. And how can we compare this value to the Korosev theorem? Okay, to compare it, we have to keep in mind that in this kind of evolution, we have kept the initial conditions locked to a specific resonance. So we do not have to use the generic exponent of the Korosev theorem, but an improvement which has been obtained by Peschel. That is, in such a case, the stretching exponent in 1 over 2 nu, where nu is the number of the reduced degrees of freedom of the resonance. In such a case, since it is a map, it is interpolated by a 3 degrees of freedom Hamiltonian system, it is a single resonance, so nu is equal to 2, and the theoretical stretching exponent is 1 over 4, which is compatible within the numerical errors to our computation. So now let us go on and let us compare it with steepness. Now I will superimpose to this computation the computation obtained with initial conditions in the steep domain, which are symmetric. The computation for the steep case are reported in blue, and this is the result. So this plot was obtained first 2 years ago, and we were very surprised by this behavior. since you see that qualitatively is very different from the convex case, because the behavior of the change of the diffusion coefficients, which are with respect to epsilon, is characterized by oscillations of many orders of magnitude. That is, if we increase epsilon, the diffusion coefficient may increase and not decrease. And also, there are values of epsilon for which the steep case is more stable than the convex case. So we were very surprised by this kind of result. And in these 2 years, we tried to understand more what really happens in this kind of systems. And trivially, the first thing that one can think to do is, of course, to repeat the computation for different locations of the resonance. So this represents the location for this computation. So now we change to another location. This is the result. So the black dots represent the convex computations, the blue dots, the steep one. We can change. This is the result. The black dots, the convex computation, the blue dots, the steep ones. So, okay, I could continue, but the result is the same. So we changed and we measured also the topological properties of the stable and unstable manifolds of the hyperbolic torus to try to understand if they are correlated to this kind of oscillating behavior. And precisely, I will show you now a computation for which, in the steep case, I chose two values of epsilon such that for the smallest one we obtain faster diffusion, and I compute the unstable manifolds of the hyperbolic torus related in both cases. So let us consider epsilon equal 10 to the power minus 6. On this plot I represented the phase portrait of the resonance, and you see that chaos is extremely small. It's so small that you cannot see on this picture. So we expect that by approaching the hyperbolic torus, the unstable manifolds start oscillates, and in fact this is what we compute. These computations report an enlargement of around the hyperbolic torus, and it represents the intersection of the first return of the unstable manifold to the hyperbolic torus. And you see that it is nicely characterized by oscillations, as usual, but the amplitude of the oscillation is very small. Look at the amplitude of the window. And now I compare the results for the two values of epsilon, that is 4 times to the power minus 7, the smallest one, and the larger one. And you see that qualitatively the behavior is the same, the topological property is the same, but the amplitude of this oscillation is very different. It is much larger for the smallest value of epsilon. So also the topological properties of the stable and unstable manifold are correlated to the oscillation in the diffusion properties. So what to do now? The last step to do is this one, that is we compare the many different initial conditions on the resonance, and I plotted here the logarithm of the ratio between the diffusion coefficient in the steep case with the diffusion coefficient in the convex case. And for any one of the couples, each line on this plot represents what happens for any couple, for one of the couples. And this is the situation, that is, the upper envelope is always in the positive upper half of the plane, that is, the steepest, the steep initial conditions are really the most unstable ones. That means that if we fix epsilon, we find the most unstable initial conditions among the steep one. If we change epsilon, we still find the most unstable initial conditions in the steep one, but we have to change the set. We do not obtain such a kind of behavior if we fix just one location in the action space. So I think that in this sense, the Nekrasov conjecture, our numerical computations agree with the Nekrasov conjecture, but really one has to change location in the action space by changing epsilon to find the most unstable one. And I think that it is closest to the spirit of the proof of Nekrasov theorem, and then the convex systems, why one may consider to remain locked to a specific resonance. Maybe I have a few minutes? Okay, so this is represents the computation done in a single resonance, and I would like to show the result for a computation done in a double resonance. I will skip all the details. Okay, this is the result. Same techniques as before, same choice of initial conditions. Only here we have a six-dimensional map that is four degrees of freedom Hamiltonian system and double resonance. In this case, the black points represent the convex initial condition, who behaves as expected, and the blue points the steep initial condition, so no oscillations. And in this case, both curves could be represented well by an exponential. We can repeat, we can compare different initial conditions, different places in the action space, as before, and this is the result. So you see that for any individual couple, there is an increasing of the ratio between the diffusion coefficient of the steep set with respect to the diffusion coefficient of the convex set. So there is no need to change place in the action space. So in this case, the agreement of this experiment with the conjecture is much sharper. But, of course, these are not the only numerical experiments that we have done. We have done for many other resonances. And we always find that for single resonance, that strange kind of oscillating behavior, while in higher dimensional resonances, everything is more smooth, is more the agreement with the conjecture is sharper. So the conclusion of this work is that in the single resonances, we have the agreement, the behavior of the diffusion coefficient, the perturbation parameter, is qualitatively different from the steep and the non-convex case. In the convex case, we are able to fit the evolution of the diffusion coefficient to exponentials, while in the steep case, we are not. But if we compare the diffusion in different locations of the action space, in such a case we are able to confirm the conjecture that the convex systems, the convex initial conditions, are more stable than the steep one. Instead, in the double resonances, the agreement of the conjecture is really sharper and does not require to consider different locations in the action domain. So that's all.